Okay, so today we're going to talk about the Orthoptera. Remember your first exam through the Atergota is Tuesday. So, anybody have any questions before we start today?
I could think of.
All right, we'll jump right in here then. Said today is the Orthoptera. We'll be starting a series of lectures on what we call the orthopteroid orders. And we're now, you know, in this parometabolis or gradual metamorphosis, and there's a number of orders that are related to each other and related to the grasshoppers and katydids. And so we lump all these together and call them the orthopteroid orders. We'll eventually, then after that, get to a group of orders that we call the hemipteroid orders, things that are related to the, more to the Hemiptera, and then that leads us into the holometabolus. But you should also be aware that some of these orthopteroid orders have fairly recently been split out into separate orders, that they used to be lumped together, the grasshoppers and the rock crawlers and the cockroaches and number of things used to all be grouped together into one big Orthopter order, and now they've been split into a bunch of smaller ones. So, and so we will talk about the Orthoptera today in the what we'd say the strict sense, just what it, well, it contains the grasshoppers and crickets and katydids, that type of thing. In the Orthoptera in general, again, these are familiar, should be familiar to you. Everybody knows what grasshoppers and katydids and crickets look like.
No.
You don't? But they may have long or short antennae. As we'll see, that's how we divide it into two suborders. There's the suborder Coelophora that has short antennae, and then the suborder Ancyphora that has long antennae. They may be winged or they may be wingless. If they have wings, there's usually two pairs, and usually the front pair is somewhat hardened and leathery. We call it tegmina. The hind wings are usually more membranous and have many veins in them. At rest, the hind wings are kind of folded up fan-like underneath the front wings. What else? The hind femora are usually somewhat enlarged in the Orthoptera, bigger, and so they're jumping insects. Remember the term for jumping?
Saltatorial.
Saltatorial, that's right. They often have an ovipositor, maybe short or maybe very long, as we've seen in some of the crickets and katydids. They often have short cerci, and the tarsi are usually three or four segmented. In a couple cases, there may be no tarsi. One of the families, the hind legs anyway, can have no tarsi. And so anyway, as I said, we split this into two suborders based on primarily on the, well, there's a number of things, but the easy way is the length of the antennae. We'll talk about the short-horned grasshoppers first. And this is the suborder Coelophora. And the antennae are usually half the length of the body or less. Many of these groups can stridulate, and they do so by rubbing the hind legs against the front wings. So they rub their hind legs against their wings. As we'll see in the Ancyphora, a lot of those can also stridulate, but they don't use their hind legs. They actually rub their two front wings together. And that'd be like the crickets. So they have different mechanisms for stridulating. As we'll see, there's one exception in the Coelophora, the family Romaliidae. Stridulates a little differently, but they have often have a hearing type organ. Remember the tympana?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the coelophora, if they have a tympana, which is just a kind of a round circular organ that's kind of membranous, and so it can vibrate, it can pick up vibrations, and in some insects like the cicadas, it can actually generate vibrations that make the noise. But in the coelophora, if they have a tympana, it's usually located on the side of the abdomen, up there by the close to the thorax on the first abdominal segment. In the encephalopod, when we get to it, if they have a tympana, it's usually located on the front tibia, mm-hmm. so on one of the legs. In the coelophora, the tarsi are usually three or segments or less. The ovipositor is short. These tend to be fairly active and quick-moving insects. They readily jump, they readily fly, and so a lot of their defense is to get away from their predator or get away from us, get away. So they also, some of them can bite. Some of the bigger ones, my notes say even some can draw blood. Mostly they're phytophagous, but if you've ever run like lights at night and you get some of these bigger grasshoppers or katydids on your sheet, all of a sudden you'll notice they're going around eating some of the other insects. So sometimes they will eat other insects. Another mode of defense is that they sometimes regurgitate their gut contents. If you ever grabbed a grasshopper, next thing you know, you got brown stuff all over your fingers. So they're regurgitating. And also they have what is called autotomy. Auto means self, tome means kind of like a part. But they can lose a leg. If you happen to try to grab one and you grab it by one leg, the leg will break off and it'll still be able to go and survive. Kind of like a snake losing the tip of its tail if it got caught or something like that.
That just happens with coelophora, right?
That autotomy probably could happen with the katydids and crickets too, I would think.
Well, that would explain why that one was missing a leg.
Maybe so. Okay, so now we'll talk about some of the families within the coelophora. And the first one we'll talk about is the family Teptidridae. The Teptridids, called the pygmy grasshoppers or grouse locusts, and they're usually fairly easy to tell. To recognize in that the pronotum is extended way back over the back and becomes long and slender. So this isn't the abdomen that you see on these
that's
pictures.
The
yeah, the pronotum goes all the way back here. So the pronotum is extended way back over the abdomen. Nothing else in the Orthoptera has that. So if you see the pronotum extending way back like that, then you know you got a Teptidrid. There's about 1,000 species worldwide. They're relatively small. They're not as big as the other typical grasshoppers. Usually less than 15 millimeters. As I said, the pronotum extends backward over the abdomen, is narrowed. The front wings are kind of vestigial, so they're reduced or lacking. Here I'll introduce a term to you. That, have you ever heard of tarsal formulas?
Yeah, I believe that for beetles they're used to figure out like the specific, I don't want to say family, but it could be.
Yeah, it gets you down to groups and stuff. But yeah, it's used mostly in the beetles. You hear tarsal formulas for everything. But it's useful in other groups. And in this group, the tarsal formula would be 2, what we'd say is 2-2-3. And what that means is the front tarsi, there's two the front legs have two tarsal segments, the middle legs have two tarsal segments, and the hind legs have three tarsal segments. The remaining grasshopper families are all 3-3-3. So, also in this family, the arolia are missing. You know what the arolia are? Arolia are absent. And I think one of the handouts coming up, there will be a good picture of it. Where it is present, it's hard to... Well, there's just not a picture here. But the arolia is a little pad-like structure coming out between the tarsal claws. I said I'll point it out in one of the next handouts. But the arolia is absent in this family. Again, these are just other characters that might help, but again, the pronotum extending back over the back should be enough to identify this group. These overwinter as adults. They're not usually economically important. They're often found in moist, wet areas. They do occur around here. I know in particular I've caught them out there at the Moorhead Science Center a number of times, probably down there at Mirpool.
Quick Google search. Yeah, I've seen a few of these around. Yeah. I just haven't, you know, this was in my history, not in my actual...
Well, and so I kind of said that on one of our trips that I think it was about the katydids, but you need to realize that not all katydids are this. I guess they're all in the same family, but there's different subfamilies. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with the grasshoppers. There's several different families of grasshoppers, and so mm-hmm. you shouldn't have the mindset, okay, I've got a grasshopper, I don't need to get any more. You should try to get some of the others, because you'll have, mm-hmm. you get points for identifying them down to subfamily too. So anything I require you guys to know in class will get you points for sure. So so anyway, that's the tetrigids. Pretty easy, and they do occur around here. So probably they overwinter as adults, so they're probably still out and around as adults right now. And, I mean, there's lots of different kinds of grasshoppers around. Now we'll talk about some families that are more like the true grasshoppers. And the first one we'll talk about is, on your handout it says Romalianae, but it's been raised to family, so... That N should be crossed out and put a D. And you can see where I've drawn a line down kind of through the middle of this handout to separate the Romalianae. And on the other side, the other side is the Acridiidae, but there's this subfamily, Cyrtacridiidae, on this handout anyway. I didn't mean to make that look like I crossed that out. I was just underlining it. So it's still the Acridiidae. The Romalianae, like I said, on this handout, does yours say... some of these I corrected. Did I correct that one?
And, yeah.
So your thing has the D in there.
So that is a family now.
Yeah. It used to be a subfamily within the Acridiidae, but it's been separated out because it is somewhat different in different ways. These are the lubber grasshoppers. This is the larger, they tend to be larger and darker in color. There's some dark green ones, but a lot of them are black in color, sometimes with some yellow or reddish coloration. Especially the immatures are real pretty. But these are the ones that are often used in biology classes for doing dissections and stuff. So... these, as I said, they have a different stridulatory mechanism. Here, the front wings rub against the hind wings. So they don't rub their leg against the wings, they just rub their front wings and hind wings together to stridulate.
And that's the Romalianae.
Romalianae, yeah, we're talking about the Romalianae right now. The things on the left-hand side of that. Also, this group, and this isn't always easy to see, but let me check here. this illustration right here, this is a side view, but if you, this is the, I believe it's the hind tibia. And notice when you get clear down at the apex, there's several of these little spurs and spines, but it has a spine right here. Okay? Whereas over in the acridity, when you get down there, it has all those other little spines, but there's not that one right there. So that's where that's pointing, is that it's the outer, the notes say outer immovable spine is present in the Romaliidae and it's absent in the Acridity. To me, that's being redundant because by definition, a spine is immovable. If it can move, what's it called? Do you know?
Club.
No.
Spur.
That's right, a spur. Oh. If you got a sharp pointed structure coming off of the body or leg someplace, if it's movable, it's called a spur. If it's non-movable, it's called a spine.
Okay.
So, hind tibia with both inner and outer movable spines. Like I said, this was a side view. You could do a different view where it comes down like this, kind of more of an anterior view, and you'll see a spine on both corners, and then the tarsi still go on down. Whereas over here in the acridity, and come down there and there'd only be a spine on one side, not on the other. So.
Yeah, that's this thing in general. Okay.
It's possible to get lever grasshoppers up here. There's at least one larger, darker green one, but it's probably not as likely. So.
Okay.
Most of these are western in distribution, but there is a species that's down in the southeast. I used to catch them down in Alabama and that fairly commonly. As I said, these are the ones that are used in biology classes and that. So, then we go to the family Acridity, and this again contains most of your commonly collected grasshopper types. These are commonly called the shorthorn grasshoppers. They're sometimes also called locusts. There's about 10,000 species in this family. Separated from the Tetrigidae by the abdomen, or the pronotum's not produced backwards over the abdomen. Wings and the tympana, which is on the first abdominal segment, are almost always present. The hind tibia only have that inner immovable spine at the apex. They don't have the outer spine. Ovipositor is short. Most of these are drab colored, gray or brown mottled. Some have brightly colored hind wings though. They may look pretty dull and drab when they're just sitting there, but when they take flight, they'll be bright yellow wings or bright red wings. This family includes a number of species that are important pests. These usually overwinter as eggs that are laid under the ground. The female will somehow insert its abdomen down into the dirt and lay the eggs in the soil. Many of these do stridulate. Now, we do separate this family into a number of subfamilies. The first couple that we're going to talk about have a tubercle or spine up underneath their throats between the head and the pronotum. And this first subfamily, in fact, are called the Cerdocanthacridini. Its common name is called the spur-throated grasshoppers. These are usually fairly large. As I said, the prosternum has a median spine or tubercle. The next subfamily we're going to talk about also has that spine or tubercle. And so one of the ways we tell these two subfamilies apart, the Cyrtacanthocrinidae, if you turn them over and look at the underneath side, this is the, I'm having trouble. It seems like every lecture I'm having trouble getting the stuff gunk in my throat or something. Anyway, the mesosternal lobes. So this is the mesosternum. Underneath, the prosternum would be up here, the metasternum down here. This is the mesostomum, and you see there's two lobes. These lobes tend to be longer than they are wide. Okay, so these lobes are longer than wide, and that posterior inner angle tends to be somewhat angulate. Okay.
These are the metasternal plates.
They're called the mesosternal lobes. So, the mesosternal lobe is longer than wide, and the inner margin is usually angulate. Other things, the wings are usually hyaline, meaning they're clear. They don't usually have much color to the hind wings. The legs of the males lack the row of stridulatory pegs. It's how they usually stridulate, is when they rub that hind leg against the wings, there's a series of pegs on the inner surface of the femur. And in this subfamily, those pegs are missing. One way that you can sometimes recognize these is when they're alive, they have vertically striped eyes. I don't know if you ever caught some, and you can kind of see stripes on the eyes. So their eyes are vertically striped. That doesn't always preserve well, so you can't always see it after they've died and you've pinned them up. Also, the antennae tend to be a little bit longer in this subfamily than they are in the melanoplane that we're going to talk about in a second. In this subfamily, the antennae tend to be a little bit longer. Said you'll, where you probably will have trouble is separating this subfamily with the melanoplane. So I'm trying to give characters where they differ, and it's not real obvious, but anyway, the antennae tend to be a little bit longer in this subfamily than the melanoplane. There's only one genus, this Schistocerca, that you can see on your handout. But it does contain the desert locust. This Schistocerca gregaria is the name that can build up into fairly large numbers. Now, as I said, the subfamily that you might confuse it with is the melanoplane, which is on the next handout. It's one that's got kind of a grasshopper down the lower right hand corner. It's got black spots on it and stuff. This whole sheet is the melanoplane, except for the image right in the square in the middle. That one's actually been broken off into its own subfamily, a very small and rarely encountered subfamily, so we don't have to mess with it. But again, and here's an illustration of the prosternum right here in the middle, and you can see that spur on the where it'd be in the throat. The head would be right up here. These are the front legs where they'd come off, and so there's this spine or spur right up kind of its throat. So both the last subfamily and this subfamily have that. Then how I was telling you to tell it apart, here's the mesosternal lobes, and now notice that they're wider than they are long, and now they're also more rounded on that posterior inner angle rather than angulate. This subfamily used to be included in the Cerdacanthocrinidae, but it's been broken off into its own subfamily now. Again, the prosternum has that spine or tubercle. The mesosternal lobe is wider than long, and the inner margins are rounded. Here, the hind wings are still usually hyaline or clear. The hind legs of the males also lack the stridulatory pegs. Now here, the compound eyes may or may not be striped, but if they're striped, they're horizontal. Whereas in the Cerdacanthocrinidae, if they were striped, they were vertical. The antennae tend to be somewhat shorter in this group than the Cerdacanthocrinidae. The largest genus in the group is Melanoplus. See it spelled there on those left-hand images, and they contain some of the pest species. Most of the common pest species. Some of these are, again, there's some species that can build up into huge numbers, into these big swarms. One thing I probably should have been mentioning, in general, you look at both the last one and this one, the heads, I mean, they're slanting a little bit, but they're mostly vertical. Front of the face is fairly vertical on these. Because the next subfamily are called the slant-faced grasshoppers. This is the Gomphocerinae, and now notice how the face is very much more slanted. So these are the slant-faced grasshoppers. Again, these used to be in the subfamily Acridinae, but they've been pulled out. The true Acridinae is now restricted to just a few species, only one in the eastern U.S. This subfamily now does not have that spine or tubercle in the prosternum. So the prosternal tooth is missing or is lacking. So prosternum without median spine or tubercle. Hind wings are usually hyaline again, still membranous. Now the hind femora of the males do have the stridulatory pegs. And as I said, the face is slanting, sometimes very strongly so. These are normally found along wet marshes or wet meadows. There's a good chance you may have some of these. And then the last subfamily we'll talk about is the Oedipodinae. This is the handout that's up in the upper right-hand corner. It's got a whole bunch of side views of the pronotum. This subfamily also lacks the spine or tubercle on the throat. So no spine or tubercle on the throat. The characteristic of these is that the pronotum, this is looking down from the top, in the center picture, but it has a very strong ridge going right down the middle of the pronotum. And the pronotum, it's not extended way back like we see in the tetrigens, but it is extended backwards a little bit, almost forming a right angle. Whereas in the other subfamilies, it's kind of produced backwards a little bit, but not enough to form a right angle, and it tends to be a little bit more rounded. So These are commonly called the band-winged grasshoppers. So these are the ones that have the usually have the colorful yellow and reddish wings. Occasionally they're hyaline wings, but in that case the males do have stridulatory pegs on the hind legs. The face is relatively vertical here again, not slanted like in the last subfamily. These often occur in areas of sparse vegetation. I mean, when we walk to where my van is, that's the ones that are flying we see every once in a while. There are a few pest species. These are also the ones that, if you've ever scared up a grasshopper when it flew and it makes a cracking sound. So this is the subfamily that makes that cracking sound when they fly. And so that's the Acritidae with the four subfamilies that we're going to cover in that one. And the next family we'll talk about is the Tridactylidae, which are called the pygmy mole crickets. Are you guys familiar with mole crickets?
Yeah, they have the very distinct forelegs.
Yeah. Well, these look a lot like those mole crickets, except in miniature. They're little tiny things. And they're in different subfamilies. These are still in the Coelophora, where the mole crickets are in the Encyphora. Mm-hmm. Even though the mole crickets really don't have very long antennae, it's one of the kind of an exception to the to that group. But anyway, these are the Tridactylidae, the pygmy mole crickets. There's only about 75 species worldwide. They have three small ocelli. The antennae are 10 or 12 segmented. The bodies are not pubescent. The mole crickets, they'll be a little bit hairy bodies. These, the tarsal formula, the TFs, are either 2-2-1 or 2-2-0. So I was saying in some species they don't have any hind tarsal. Hind tibia often have three or four of these kind of plate-like structures. You see them kind of coming off here towards the end. And those actually help them swim. These things occur usually along creeks or rivers and that, on sand dunes and that sort of thing. And so they can actually are fairly good swimmers. You'll notice, like in the mole crickets that you just talked about, the front legs are adapted for digging. Remember the term for digging front legs, digging legs?
Remember that term?
Give me a second.
It's an easy one.
Yeah, I know, that's why I can't remember. I don't know.
If you're an archaeologist and you're digging for
bones?
Well, fossils.
Fossil.
So this is fossorial.
Fossorial.
Digging legs or fossorial legs. So.
Yeah, that's what happens to me whenever it's the easy one. I'm just like, which one is this?
And so they are burrowing in habitat, occurring along shores and streams of lakes where they apparently feed on algae. Relatively small, less than 10 millimeters. And there are some that occur around here. I know they have been collected at the old Mirror Pool that I was telling you guys about. I don't know if we've ever collected any at the one you guys went to. But they do occur up around here. So it is possible to get Tridactylids. And that finishes up the Coelophora. So now we go to the Encyphora. which are commonly called the longhorn grasshoppers, because now they have long, slender antennae, usually, well, at least half the length of the body or longer, but many times they're longer than the body. You can see in that, this first handout in the Encephora that Katie did, see how long that antennae is going way beyond the end of the abdomen. This suborder includes the katydids and crickets. Antennae nearly always are long and hair-like. Here, as we already mentioned, if they have the tympana, they're on the front tibia. That's what's illustrated clear over in the left-hand side. This is the apex of the, or the base of the tibia. It's up close to the joint. So are located at the base of the front tibia. They still tend to have saltatorial type legs, so they can jump. The tarsi will be 3 or 4 segmented. Here now, the ovipositors in the females are usually relatively long. In all the Encephora, they were relatively short. But they'll be like in the katydids, they're kind of flattened and sword-like. In the crickets, they're more cylindrical and needle-shaped. If they do stridulate, now they do so by rubbing the two front wings together. They don't rub the hind leg against the wings. So. And so a lot of these tend to be more nocturnal, active at night. They depend more on crypsis for their defense, meaning they tend to try to blend in. That's why the katydids and that are green in color, blending in with the green vegetation, or the crickets are brown or black, trying to blend in with the soil and that. So, we're going to look at several families. The first two families tend to be wingless, whereas the remaining families, there can be some wingless forms, but the first two are usually almost always wingless. This is the Stenopelmatidae, and then we'll be looking at the Raphidophoridae. Again, I've made some changes to these handouts, and mine may not reflect it. Are these not in the same order?
There it is.
They were out of...
There's that one, that one, that one. Okay, yep. We do have that. It's just like 5 pages down.
Okay. Huh. There we go. This.
They're not in the right order. Okay. Well, this is one up the upper left-hand corner. Does yours say Stenopelmata knee or D?
Knee.
Okay. Well, it should be D. It's another one that's now raised to full family. Actually, both of these families on this one here, you can see where I've drawn this line down through this. Just the upper left-hand corner, the three images, the one from the side and then those two down below that, are the Stenopelmatidae. Everything else is now in this Raphidophoridae. But both, at one time, used to be in a family called the, what is it called, the Grillotalpidae. Just trying to see how to spell the thing. Oh no, the Grillocritidae. Grillocritidae. So... Real pretty.
So has that family been disbanded to form the other two families, or is that
what usually happens is that they realize that everything that was in the Grillocritidae needed to be split up into subfamilies, and what is still the Grillocritidae is probably just a few things that don't occur around here anymore. So there's probably still a Grillocritidae someplace. Mm-hmm. But the ones that we always studied that are around here are different enough that they've separated these off into their own family. So there's probably still is a Grillocritidae someplace. But it's not here, not what we study now. So So these two subfamilies, again, the wings are usually absent, but if present, then they have more than 8 principal longitudinal veins. Males lack the stridulatory structures on the wings. The tympana may or may not be present. These tend to be brown and gray in color. And as I said, the two subfamilies. We'll take a quick look at the Stenopelmatidae. These are commonly called the Jerusalem crickets. You see, I tried to draw that line through here because this common name goes with those, and this common name goes with things on the right. So, yeah, these handouts Jerry made before they split this all up. I should have mentioned that earlier, but all these handouts that have these lines and stuff now on them were made prior to when people made these changes. So those over on the left-hand side are the Stenopelmatidae. Used to be a subfamily in the Grillocritidae. Yeah, here's my notes. It says the Grillocritidae is now represented in North America by a single eastern species that does not occur here. So yeah, the Grillocritidae is still around, but it's not something we study. These are the Stenopelmatidae, tend to be fairly large insects. It includes, if you've heard of the Australian ones called Weta. They're great big huge things and with huge heads. Again, they tend to be brownish in color with black bands on the abdomen. They are generally found under stones or loose soil. There's only 9 North American species, mainly western in distribution. But I think they do occur out in the western part of our state. One thing to look for on separating this one from the next family is that the Raphidophoridae, is that the antennae are where they come into the head are fairly widely separated. This distance between the antennae where they join the head is wider than the length of the first antennal segment. So antennae are separated at base by the length of the first antennal segment or more. Some of these communicate by tapping their abdomen on a rock or on the substrate. They do that drumming. But yeah, that Weta, New Zealand and Australia are great big huge things. Now the ones on the right hand side, that Raphidophoridae that's kind of over, the name is over towards the left, actually goes with everything over on the right hand side. These are called the cave and camel crickets. They can be usually recognized by this really humpbacked appearance. Notice how this back is just always usually kind of arched. Now, one of the subfamilies of the tetrigids sometimes looks like these also. And one of the things should just keep in mind, notice that the pronotum does not extend way back to the abdomen. I mean, here's the pronotum and you can see the other thoracic segments. That'll be clear why I'm pointing that out in a little bit when we get to that. So these are the cave and camel crickets. They also used to be a subfamily in the Grillocritidae. These are usually brownish in color and rather humpbacked in appearance. Sometimes found in caves, in hollow trees, under logs and stones, other dark, moist areas. These, there's not a good picture of it, but the antennae, where they come into the head, see this would be the same, try the same view, but the antennae come in and they're almost contiguous. So their antennae situated on the head are really close together. Okay. now let's talk about another family that we divide into several subfamilies, but it's ones that, again, you should be somewhat familiar with. This is the kind of the katydids and the meadow grasshoppers, the Tetrigidae. Actually, the next three families, my notes say wings are present. Usually the wings are present. The last two, the wings are usually absent. But these, the wings are usually present. There are some exceptions. Oftentimes they're greenish in color. Well, that's the tetrigids and the meadow grasshoppers. But crickets tend to be brown or black, and the mole crickets are brownish too. The front tibia usually do have the tympana. And the first family of these that we'll talk about is this Tetragoniidae, which contain most of the things that you would consider to be the katydids. These are the longhorn grasshoppers and katydids. The tarsi are usually four-segmented. Again, auditory organs, when present, are on the base of the front tibia. Here, the ovipositors in the females are long and sword-like, kind of flattened. Blade-like, sword-like. Again, most species are plant-feeding, but a few will eat other insects. These usually overwinter as eggs that are inserted into plant tissues. Now, we'll look at a number of subfamilies in the Tetrigidae. And I'll say right up front that sometimes the names of these subfamilies and their common names aren't as straightforward as you would hope. For example, the first subfamily we're going to talk about is the Copophorinae, what's up in the upper left-hand corner, that individual up in the upper left-hand corner. And how you recognize it is it has this cone-shaped structure coming out of the front of the head. So to me, it's got this nice cone-shaped head, but there's another subfamily called the Conocephalinae. It doesn't have that cone shape. So that's the first one we'll point out. So anyway, see, we'll talk about the Conocephalinae in a minute. It's over here on the right-hand side. But up here, they have this cone-shaped structure coming out of the head. There's a blow-up of it right here. They actually have a name for that. It's called the fastigium. So, they're commonly called the cone-headed grasshoppers. So the cone-headed grasshoppers are not the Conocephalinae, but they're this Copophorinae. These have fairly long bodies. Again, cone shape, the fastigium, ovipositor long and sword-like. These are usually green, although a few species may be more brownish in color. These are ones that are on the herbaceous plants and grasses and stuff, down where we often would collect these. So there's a good chance you've collected these. I'm going to, just so I don't have to move, I'm going to stay on this page. This same handout, you'll notice that all the pictures on the lower left-hand corner have been X'd out. These are things we don't study, that Saguenay and Myconematinae and Tetragoniidae. But now the ones on the right-hand side, the Conocephalinae, these are commonly called the meadow grasshoppers. They're small to medium size and have slender bodies. To me, there's a really good chance you've got these. They've been everywhere where we've been collecting. But these look more like grasshoppers to me than katydids, except that they have really long antennae. So if you've got some things that you'd swear were grasshoppers, but they have long antennae, it's probably these Conocephalinae. They're called meadow grasshoppers. Small to medium sized, have long slender bodies. there are no spines on the dorsal surface of the four tibia. So what we're talking about, here's the tibia and this surface out here, there's no spines on. So no spines. You'll see why that's important in a second. These are usually greenish in color. Again, they're found on the wet, grassy meadows, typical places where we've been collecting, so there's a good chance you have those.
Quick question about that. Tetragoniidae, are all of their tarsi four-segmented?
Yes. Tarsi are four-segmented. I always hate to say all, but in general, yes. There's always could be some exceptions. Okay, now this next handout has the two subfamilies Phanaropterinae and the Pseudophilinae. The Phanaropterinae, the common name is just katydids. Here's the next thing on the names. The Phanaropterinae are just called katydids. Whereas over here on the Pseudophilinae, these are commonly called true katydids. Even though pseudo, as you guys are laughing, no, means false. But I don't know what the philony refers to. I ought to look that up, because it's probably false philony is what they're getting at. But still, for the purposes of learning it, the pseudo, the subfamily starts with pseudo, are the true katydids. Anyway, back to the Phanaropterinae. These are the katydids. They lack, just like in some of the grasshoppers, the next subfamily has a prosternal spine or tubercle on it in its throat. The Phanaropterinae lacks that spine. So the Phanaropterinae, these are the katydids. They usually lack the prosternal spines. One thing that you can kind of notice is that the hind wings are often longer than the front wings. Kind of can see it on these lower ones. Here's where the front wing goes and the hind wing sticks out beyond it. Same thing in this picture. So the hind wings are often longer.
That one.
Could be, yeah. Most of these species are green in color, but there are some unusual ones. I've seen them from the south, and some unusual ones that are pink in color. Now, the ones on the right-hand side of this one, called the Pseudophilinae, the true katydids, they have the front wings more oval in shape. They're not as long and slender, so these tend to look more rounded. And they have, I believe they've got a prosternal spine. The prosternal spine is present. And then this costal field. So it's the leading edge of the wing. Mm-hmm. So when it's at rest, it's the edge that's downward, right? You can picture this edge that's down here more ventrally. When it swings it out, that'd be the leading edge. But anyway, the costal field would be at rest when it's down, has all these straight veins kind of parallel. That's one way you can tell this family pretty easily, is they have this costal field of veins.
It's in the costal field on the forewing?
Right.
Okay.
So these have the front wings oval and convex with the costal field broad with many parallel transverse veins. Prosternal spine present. These are usually green. The kicker on these is this subfamily tends to be arboreal. So they're up in the trees, and so they're not collected near as much. Every once in a while, one will fall down in that, and so we do get them every once in a while, but they tend to be way up in the trees. And some, and you can hear them stridulate. Sometimes if you learn what katydids sound like, you can hear them up there. They're up there, but so. Okay. And then the last subfamily that we talk about is the Dectinae. These are commonly called the shieldback grasshoppers. This subfamily includes a common name species, the Mormon cricket, which is sometimes a pest. So, and I do believe the Mormon cricket occurs up here. These kind of look like the subfamily, or the family Raphidophoridae that I talked about earlier. They kind of can, they're often wingless, or sometimes wingless anyway, and sometimes the backs look a little bit arched. Like I said, you can sometimes have trouble telling these from the Raphidophoridae. But this is where now you notice that the pronotum does go back a little bit farther. This is all the pronotum here, back to the abdomen. That's where I was saying in the Raphidophoridae, the pronotum didn't usually extend back to the abdomen. These also, in the Conocephalinae, I mentioned that the front tibia did not have spines. These, if you look carefully, you can see there's little spines now on that front edge of the front tibia. I'm going to have to make new handouts sometimes. Every time I teach this class, I write all over them, and then I clean them off for the next time. And every time I mean, this comes off with water. I just do it with Kleenex and water. But rub it, and actually rub some of the black off each time. So there's sometimes you'll notice where every time I mark the same things, it's not showing up as clearly anyway. So anyway, these are the shieldback grasshoppers, includes the Mormon cricket, which is in North Dakota. They have the spines on the front tibia. These are brown or black in color, short-winged, and the pronotum extends back to the abdomen. They're fairly large in size, so. Do you guys got to be any place right away? I mean, does it give me another 10 minutes?
10 minutes, good.
I'd say all we got left is the crickets and the mole crickets, and it'd just be nice to go ahead and finish that today and be done, so. So now, as I said, we're going into the cricket family. This is the Grillidae, the crickets. In the crickets, the Grillidae, the tarsi are three-segmented, with the second segment sometimes somewhat small. Here, now the ovipositors are long and cylindrical, more needle-shaped. They're not flattened and blade-like like we saw in the katydids. These also, if you look at them from the front, here's like where the head would be from the front. The wings, if you look at the profile, the wings would be flat over the back and then often bend abruptly down around the sides. If you paid attention to crickets and how the wings are, they'll be flat on the back and then they kind of angled down the sides. Hind wings may be present or absent. The tympana are usually present, again located on the front tibia. Males usually have the stridulatory organs on the two front wings rubbing together. These, again, usually overwinter as eggs, which are laid in the ground or in vegetation. And here again, we divide it into several subfamilies. This cricket handout, notice we've X'd out a few things on the left-hand side. Again, they're subfamilies that we don't cover in this class. We do cover the Nemobiini there in the center upper, and down in the lower center, the Ecanthini, and then to the right, the Grillini. First one I'll talk about is the Ecanthini down in the lower center. These are commonly called the tree crickets. Again, their general appearance is much different than the other kinds. These tend to be pale whitish or whitish green in color. And they, as the name implies, they're usually up on the vegetation more. They're not down on the ground. So the Ecanthini, these are the tree crickets. These tend to be slender, whitish, or pale green in color. They lack ocelli. These often lay their eggs in the bark or stems of the trees or plants they're on. And if they're numerous, sometimes they can cause some economic damage. They can weaken the twigs or branches until they break. These are interesting in that the males and the females look quite different. These two images at the bottom of your handout are both the same species. Just the one on the left is a male and the one on the right is a female. The males tend to have that much broader wings than the females. I think so. My notes mention that. It says, males and females do not look alike. The males have broad wings for singing. So. Now, the other two subfamilies are what you would normally think of when you say crickets. They look like crickets. Mm-hmm. The Nemobiini and then the Grillini. The Nemobiini, they're commonly called ground crickets. So these are the ground, not to say that the others aren't on the ground, but they're called field crickets. These are ground crickets. Oh, it was written on there. I didn't have to write it. Ground cricket.
And then
the other ones, they're common insects in pastures, meadows, along roadsides. They tend to be a little smaller, less than 12 millimeters. Brownish in color, ocelli are present. The spines on the hind tibia are long and movable. So to me, they're not spines, they're spurs. But that's what's being pictured. You can see all these long spurs on the hind tibia. And they're movable. So when they're alive, you can move them around. Once they dry out, it'd be hard to make a move. But often you can see a little line of articulation at the base, so you can tell that they were movable. So spines of hind tibia are long and movable. Also, the last segment of the maxillary palps are fairly long. So I'm just going to write in here, long last max palp. No. Maxillary palps are the kind of segmented feeler-like things on the mouth parts, the maxillary ones. There will be maybe some other palps too, the labial palps. But they tend to be, the last segment tends to be at least twice as long as the preceding segment. Whereas in the Grillini, on your right-hand side, these are called house and field crickets. And these tend to be a little bit larger. They tend to be a little darker, more black in color. These are probably the ones that you encounter most of the time. The crickets that you see jumping around here in town and stuff probably are this Grillini. They're dark colored, brownish or black. They tend to be larger than the ground crickets. usually 14 millimeters or more. Ocelli are present. Now the spines on the hind tibia are stout and they're non-movable. So we don't have a blow up of it, but all of these now that you see are immovable, so they're true spines. And the last segment of the maxillary palps is shorter. It may be longer than the preceding segment, but if it is, it's just barely longer. It's not anywhere near twice as long. Again, these are common insects in pastures, meadows, along roadsides. Sometimes they enter people's homes. People complain about having crickets. Drive them crazy. You're sitting there watching TV and you hear a cricket chirping away, and you've seen the Big Bang episode, Big Bang episode where they're trying to chase down a cricket.
I have actually, and they were saying, oh, it's a tree cricket. You can tell by the different sounds at different temperatures. No, it was a house cricket.
Yeah, they had that big debate. Sheldon, they actually took it to the entomology department of the university there.
Yeah. So, that was a fun episode.
I think there was something. I think the entomologist there had just been fired. And a side note, he talked about working on dung beetles, and they showed an insect in a cage, and it was, I think it was one of those big hissing cockroaches that wanted dung beetles. So. So anyway, that's the Grillini. Again, they do stridulate, and we talk about their songs, and sometimes you can identify species by their songs. That'd be a little bit different song. There's also studies that show how their songs vary with temperature. The frequency of the chirps are different when it's warmer or colder and that. So then that leaves one last family to talk about, which is an easy one to recognize. And it's an interesting one, the Grillo talpidae. And these are the mole crickets. Again, this is somewhat of an exception. You can see they still have fairly long antennae and they're hair-like, but they're only about half the length of the body. So even though they're in the longhorn grasshopper bunch, their antennae's not quite as long. But this is probably a function of them being subterranean. When you're burrowing and going through the ground, any kind of delicate appendages get scraped and scratched, and so it's probably been evolving towards shorter appendages. But anyway, these are the mole crickets. Easy to tell because of the front legs modified for digging. Again, fossorial. Mm-hmm. They have two large ocelli. The compound eyes are reduced. Again, underground, they not as much need for vision. Antennae are relatively short for this group. In this group also, the ovipositor is vestigial, so lacking or very small. These tend to be brownish in color. They are more hairy. Can distinguish them from the tridactylids. Usually you can distinguish them just by size. These are quite a bit larger than the others. They do burrow in the ground, feed on the roots of plants in the south. They have been considered pests in turf grass areas, like on golf courses and things like that. What's interesting is one of their natural enemies is an assassin bug, the regiovids, mm-hmm. that also burrow under the ground. So, and they're kind of cool looking assassin bugs we'll talk about later. But these are sometimes attracted to lights. So that's where we usually would come up with them. I have not seen any from right around here, although I think we have one. I'm trying to remember. I think we have one in our collection that says it was caught by a laundromat
like one of the ones over there, or?
I don't know where it is. We'd have to hunt for it. Laundromat in Fargo. I also have heard stories that some were caught at the lights at the Capitol building in Bismarck once. So, but they're not very common up here. These are also interesting in that they burrow in the ground and lay their eggs under the ground, and they actually take care of the immatures for a while. They exhibit maternal care. They'll actually feed their young up to a month or so after they hatch and that, so. And there, that finishes the Orthoptera, sensu stricto. We got the other orthopteroid orders, the praying mantids and the walking sticks and the cockroaches and termites and a lot of other interesting orthopteroid orders, but this is the true Orthoptera, so. So, any questions over what we covered today?
I'm just trying to compare the pygmy mole crickets with the mole crickets. So, do the mole crickets' pronotum sort of extend over their abdomen slightly?
The mole crickets? It looks like it does on these pictures some. It's not something that I've seen used as a diagnostic character, but it does look like they're fairly large and cover the thorax pretty well. I don't know. But it doesn't look much different than it does in the tridactylids either. I mean, so.